Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is brought to you by It. Welcome to Derry, the new TV show that serves as a prequel to It. You're about to hear Elric and I rave about it on the show this week. From the director of It comes a horrifying new story set in the 1960s, Derry, Maine, a story that explores the origins of Pennywise the Clown. Get ready to go back to where It all began. The first few episodes were packed with scares and some of the best nightmare sequences that we've seen in a long time. The new HBO series, It, Welcome to Derry, is now streaming on HBO Max. Please also check out the It, Welcome to Derry podcast. On the It, Welcome to Derry podcast, join hosts Mark Bernardin and Princess Weeks as they unpack each episode after it airs on HBO Max. The It, Welcome to Derry podcast walks you back down the streets of Derry 27 years before the Losers Club first formed, and then pulls you down into the sewers to dig into the history and the lore and the horror of what makes Derry, Maine's most sinister suburb. On each episode, you'll hear from the show's creator, like Andy and Barbara Muschietti, plus cast and crew members as they talk about the making of the show. New podcast episodes drop every week after the episode airs on HBO Max. Stream new episodes of HBO's It, Welcome to Derry, Sundays on HBO Max, and listen to It, Welcome to Derry official podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Colors of the Dark. We love doing bonus episodes. It's been a while, Alric. We haven't done one since it was a convention. I think it was Midsummer Scream. It's been a stretch.
It may be Fantasia as well. When we're
Fantasia. Oh, yeah. So we're excited to be doing a bonus episode on this very special Monday. And what we are here to talk about today is It. Because we have been absolutely loving the new It TV show, Welcome to Derry. And so we have really wanted to talk about it and kind of dive into the whole franchise. We are excited to welcome on the hosts of the It Welcome to Derry podcast, Princess Weeks, Mark Bernardin. How are you doing?
Amazing. Great.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. So we're going to start going all the way back to the books. So, well, let me ask this. Was it the books or was it the TV shows or the movies? Like, what was your first exposure to it? Or was it just kind of seeing Pennywise in the ether and being like, what the hell?
It was definitely the books. My mom was a huge Stephen King fan. We actually talked about it today. And I was watching some weird thing about John Wayne Gacy. And I was just like, I should finally read those It books, the It book. And I loved it and I enjoyed it. I still actually have not finished the entire Tim Curry run of It. But I did enjoy what I did see. And I love the movie so much. Chapter one gave me like one of the most authentic jump scares I'd had in a long time. So it's really thrilling to be able to do this and do it with Mark, who is just an incredible, thoughtful person.
By the way, what I just heard was I was really into John Wayne Gacy, and that got me into it. That's how my brain took that in.
It's the same. Like, my mother watches a lot of like ID. So I would just be like falling asleep like, Joe, okay, he's a killer clown. I wonder if that has anything to do with... And then okay. I read Pennywise.
For me, it was the 80s miniseries. It was Tim Curry. It was that collection of fantastic TV actors who all get assembled to do, like, you know, for the time, fantastic miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it today, it's a little creaky in places. It's a little thorny at times, but Tim Curry is still amazing. Tim mm-hmm. Curry supersedes all of it, but that was my way in.
Imagine that cast, but today's HBO type TV making. You know what I mean? Like how movies are so much more like TV, so much more like movies now than it was 100%. Then. I could only imagine, because Tommy Lee Wallace is a really good director too.
Oh, yeah.
That. And John Ritter would have been, he's really great. And
oh, he's so good in that. Yeah.
He's amazing in it. And I'm not saying that the cast is bad.
Yeah.
But it is not, they were not making TV the way we make TV today. They
Absolutely.
Didn't have the resources, they didn't have the bandwidth. They just didn't have the sensibility for it. Mm-hmm. And so it where it works, it still works. But when it falls down, it falls hard.
There's also something, because I rewatched the series a couple days ago in prep for this, the original, and then, of course, the new one. Mm-hmm. And it made me grossly aware of television breaks and the idea that, because I've had to do this with Lifetime movies, and the idea mm-hmm. that you're writing to a television break, and then when you come back, you have to reestablish all of the stakes and then keep going, so that each one of the television breaks felt like an act, like they very much had their own arc. And so I was grossly aware of that, which is weird because I never was aware of that as I was watching television. But now that I've been so far removed from linear TV, to kind of go back and watch it and realize how structured it is around those. And that's not something that we see anymore when we're watching it. Welcome to Derry. It is very much flowing, much in like a movie sensibility.
Yeah. I mean, I would bet, you know, we've spoken to Brad Caleb Kane and Jason Fuchs in the podcast, but we didn't get like to the underneath the nitty gritty of mm-hmm. their structure. But like, I would bet they still had a general loose like act one, act two, act three, act four, act five structure to it, even though there's mm-hmm. no commercial breaks, because it just adds a nice rhythm. But looking at like how you had to build to False Jeopardy in the 1980s, of, like every 8 minutes to break away and sell soap and cars, is an astonishing just sort of relic of what TV.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, Elric,
I was just going to say, you feel how it's shoehorned in now, because mm-hmm, if you watch, now that Amazon, even though I pay for Amazon, it still puts ads in because I don't pay the higher rate. And the where it puts them is so random.
It's so awful, random. Especially, you know, Tubi. I swear, they just sprinkle those things like pepper throughout, where it's just like, wait, I was mid-sentence, go back. Like, I don't think anybody's even looking at it. It's just AI is just dropping that shit.
It's an algorithm. It's
which crazy. Is tough, yeah.
You know, Elric, we've been doing this together for so long. Have I ever asked you, like, did you read the books or the movie first? Like, or the miniseries? Where did it start?
No, it was definitely a miniseries. I don't even know if I didn't ever read this book, because I think the length of it intimidated me as a kid. Pet Sematary was the first one I read when I was pretty young. And I think because I have a problem that if I see a visual medium first, I never go back. Ever. So if I've seen the movie, I can never go read a book. But if I read the book first, I'm fine. And I would have been pretty young when the TV series came on. So I probably, that was it for me, you know, from then on.
Wow.
So I never did. Gosh. But should I?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, y'all clearly were never sixth graders with peanut allergies first forced to eat in the office instead of the cafeteria. So you just read the whole time, because that's where I was. And so with that, like, I read it, I was probably in fifth or sixth grade, because my mom had the full collection of Stephen King, and I'd burned through all of Christopher Pike and all of the other R.L. Stine stuff. And so I'd moved into Stephen King pretty early. So my intro to it was definitely reading the book. And I remember there's descriptions in the book that will haunt me to this day, like them describing how Georgie looks. It describes the white bone of his shoulder sticking through the rain slicker and blood like leaking. And just those descriptions haunt me to this day. Even the it's the opening of the second part of the miniseries, where we see the character who's killed himself and is written on the shower wall, the way that that's described in the book. Some of this shit has stuck with me. And then, you know, I was immediately, when the miniseries came along, that was my favorite thing, was like seeing what they had kept or had not kept, or how they did it, how they did the old woman in the house when Beverly goes back to visit her later, as compared to the book. But the book is great. Like, there is very much some differences that have kind of been lost in the different versions of the IP. Like, if memory serves, in the book, he actually has like a name, like Bob or something like that. Like, he has a name that he introduces himself as occasionally, not just Pennywise at times. So yeah, but it's got some differences to it, much like The Shining. There are some things that have been lost over the years.
Yeah, Bob Gray, I think is.
That's it.
What it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's stuck in there. That book made me cry. Like, I feel like the oddest Stephen King books always make me emotional. But like, as an older sibling, the center conflict of like, you didn't watch your younger sibling one time, and then he gets eaten by a clown. And I remember even when I watched the movie with the Muschiettis, that whole climax in the sewer made me cry, because that guilt just resonates with you. And I think the way that King writes is so electric and visceral that there are passages that you just remember mm-hmm. the whole time through.
Yeah. And was this the first King book that you had read, Princess, or had you read prior ones before that?
No, my first was definitely Carrie, which is my favorite King book. I didn't read this one until my 20s because I was intimidated by how big it was. And I was like, there's
It's
so many
huge.
other ones I can kind of like nibble at. Like The Green Mile is really interesting because it's written
Oh, yeah.
in, it was most people probably know it was submitted, so it was in sections. And so when you're reading it and you're like, okay, he was writing and then he was ending it right now, writing. Well, sorry. He was writing and he's like, okay, I have to wrap this up now. And now we're gonna end it. And it feels very fun and electric. But when I finally read it was interesting how King is very interesting with how he includes sexuality in the book. That's like the big controversy with it. And while I understand why it's very icky and weird to read, I do think that he manages to understand how to express those liminal spaces. And I think what it Welcome to Derry does really well is remind us about that frustration and hopelessness of being a kid.
Yes,
Well, it's from
I
their
completely.
perspective. It's not like from some creepy. I never feel like King's writing from a creepy adult talking about child sexuality. You know what I mean? It feels like this is about being young. When you're young, you have a certain view, and everyone has drives at that age when you're growing up. And I think that's something impressive about the way he writes, especially back then. It always felt pretty unfiltered in that sense. But as soon as you film something like that, it does naturally become controversial.
Yeah, the gaze
Yeah.
just
Right.
changes. Oh,
Of
I think
course.
like
Yeah.
completely. So that
Well,
totally tracks.
I am curious about like the approach that what you guys have kind of taken to the approach of what you've kind of what parts are most exciting to you about the approach to the show, because this version of the show isn't that IP exactly, right? And like, to be honest, the first episode I feel so dumb because The Shining's my favorite movie of all time, and like it one after one episode my friend had to say, "You realize that character's Dick O'Halloran?" And I was like, "Oh my
Oh
God." And
my
then
God, I didn't even realize that.
yeah,
Holy sh.
so the guy who's from the military man who's going to the different sites, and when he said that, and then I went to episode two, I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting, because he's using the power of The Shining to locate things. So as soon as it became a bigger mythology, you realized, ooh, this could go kind of anywhere to me. But again, you guys are on the not completely on the inside, but on the inside more than we are. What has been most exciting to you about the approach of this version?
I mean, for me, it's a bit of the rigor of how they're doing that, because the playing field is so wide. The minute you begin, and yes, like Dick Allen is a character in it, but definitely not as big a character as he plays in this series. And so to be able to pull him in and make him an integral part of that drama, to be able to pull in, Princess and I have talked quite a bit about how Stephen King is a fantastic writer, but the time he was writing these books was not a particularly enlightened one. And so for him to just casually, in lots of books, be like, Indian burial ground. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, I get it, Uncle Stevie. This is kind of where you were in 1973. But to then now in 2025 eyes, look back at that stuff and say, okay, now how can we make this work? How can we contextualize this for a modern audience? How can we pull bits and pieces from Stephen King lore and help to enforce the structure and the foundations of what we're trying to do here? It's been really exciting. And it's not easy to do that kind of alchemy. And they seem to have kind of pulled it off without breaking too much of a sweat, he says, without having been in the writer's room and seeing all the darlings that were killed and all of the fights that were had. But I'm just very impressed with how they pulled it off.
Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is brought to you by It. Welcome to Derry, the new TV show that serves as a prequel to It. You're about to hear Elric and I rave about it on the show this week. From the director of It comes a horrifying new story set in the 1960s, Derry, Maine, a story that explores the origins of Pennywise the Clown. Get ready to go back to where it all began. The first few episodes were packed with scares and some of the best nightmare sequences that we've seen in a long time. The new HBO series, It, Welcome to Derry, is now streaming on HBO Max. Please also check out the It, Welcome to Derry podcast. On the It, Welcome to Derry podcast, join hosts Mark Bernardin and Princess Weeks as they unpack each episode after it airs on HBO Max. The It, Welcome to Derry podcast walks you back down the streets of Derry 27 years before the Losers Club first formed, and then pulls you down into the sewers to dig into the history and the lore and the horror of what makes Derry Maine's most sinister suburb. On each episode, you'll hear from the show's creator, like Andy and Barbara Muschietti, plus cast and crew members as they talk about the making of the show. New podcast episodes drop every week after the episode airs on HBO Max. Stream new episodes of HBO's It, Welcome to Derry, Sundays on HBO Max, and listen to It, Welcome to Derry official podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm really impressed with how Pennywise has evolved, because if we look back at kind of the miniseries, so book aside, looking at the old school miniseries, watching it from a child perspective, I never saw him as kind of a multidimensional being. He was kind of like an alien, but I feel like with the movies and especially into the TV show, they've really played him up as something other. Like, I even saw a website this morning describe him as Lovecraftian or an eldritch horror. And with that, it feels like it's really pushing it in a much more kind of heady direction than just he, you know, fell from the sky and eats your soul. And I've been really impressed with how, especially within the TV show, how they embody his ability to psychologically affect you. Like that cold open is epic. The very first episode, cold open. Oh my God. That just came out literally like swinging the fetus. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say that.
So many babies, mutant babies. That was one of the things that we first talked about. It was like the first two episodes. It's like, wow, a lot of birth trauma going on that we're unpacking. And to your point, I do think it's interesting seeing that aspect of Pennywise get so much exploration, because it just highlights how much more of the story there is for that character, that entity, and how, you know, the tendrils of him will end up leaking into other King properties as we go forward when you read the books. And I think it's fun, and it allows, I think Bill Skarsgård like is just so fun and magnetic in that role and does something totally different. So it's really engaging to see how Pennywise's hunting has evolved over the years that he's been on Earth. And I think as the show progresses, you get more and more of an idea of he's a learning, growing eldritch horror. And that's even effing worse than what we than being just a killer clown.
Well, I like that they're slow, that this is, you know, we are I am only three episodes in, right? And that's at this moment, yeah, the public three. can mm-hmm. see I don't know if you guys are seeing more behind the scenes, but the fact that we only get our first kind of glimpse around now, and that it's a glimpse, I almost want to make a note, like, if anyone's thinking about redoing Nightmare on Elm Street, please pay attention to this, because because you can slowly bring something in mm-hmm. versus just hit it hard, because we already know what these characters are capable of, but when you see it like this, it feels almost accidental, like I wasn't meant to see him mm-hmm. and so something's looking back now, and I thought that was a very, very effective and creepy way for them to structure this, and also I couldn't tell you where it's going to go, and yeah. that's rare nowadays, I feel, especially in a movie, you kind of get a sense quickly of how this is going to all play out. And here I'm like, no, I don't know, because there's three to four big storylines.
They're dancing a really tricky dance with this, which is trying to explore a character and give you new information you didn't have before, but not answering questions nobody was asking, you know, not demystifying something that should be mysterious. And, you know, it's hard to do, which is to like, oh, we're getting more, but you're not completely just shining the light on the thing that's supposed to be the bump in the dark. Mm-hmm. And because we've all seen a few too many franchises who have just demystified or made cuddly or made like, oh, well, now he's kind of a hero. You know, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, and it's, and I'm struggling a little bit to not say the movie that I just saw today that kind of does that, where it's like, I didn't need a coming of age story for this thing that was a particularly effective monster. I don't want to know teenage trauma. I just want you to be fucking badass. I just want you to be hella scary. I want you to be terror on wheels. And I don't want to know too much about that.
That's the biggest issue with prequels usually, right? Exactly. Like it's, they almost always explain it away. Mm-hmm. I know which movie, I haven't seen the movie you're talking about, but I know exactly what it would be. And interestingly enough, it's done very well financially, but I agree with you, because even if it's a total home run going forward, can we ever go back?
Yeah.
Because once you show something being the character you empathize with, like I never really want to empathize with an alien from Alien, even though in the show you kind of start to the new series of that.
You do moments of it,
but I didn't think it totally demystified. It comes close a couple times, but because of who's communicating with the alien, it's not so bad. But I totally agree with you. Yeah. Horror, especially, like there was a Freddy Krueger prequel, but it was in the Freddy's Nightmares episodes, and they showed him on trial, the Robert Englund pre Freddy, and he's on trial for. But what he did was so awful that it doesn't soften them at all.
But I don't think that you can ever go back, because Freddy forever will now be son of 100 maniacs or 1,000 maniacs, whatever it is. And his mom was Amanda the Nun. Like, all that stuff is always embedded in the lore now. Pinhead will always be a war veteran and having discovered the Boxer in Vietnam. Like, all those things can't be separated anymore because we built them into canon. So it is hard to kind of blow up the box afterwards to make it brand new. But I think that this one is doing a really good job of slow rolling it in and making sure that we are not getting all that information and finding out, you know, what his childhood was like. Since I know you've talked to the Machetes and about this, how did they approach this differently from a movie? Like, and what was kind of the idea behind, you know, let's not do It Part Three, let's do a series?
I mean, I think that they were particularly excited about the ability for them to go back through time and to trip their way into American history. And I think as foreigners, as immigrants, they're particularly, you know, intrigued by America as it had developed, you know, either America the Beautiful or America the Evil Empire. Either way, it's how did you get here from there? And so that opened up for them what we can talk about, what the show can be about, because the show can't just be about Pennywise. And so what else do we get to talk about? It's like, oh, America in the 60s. Oh, boy, we got nothing but drama waiting to happen. And they embraced it, you know, and they also realized that they don't know TV. And so they found TV people who do. And they're like, listen, here are the things that are exciting us. Here's the things that we want to explore. Help us build this into something that can sustain for 8 episodes, can sustain for, you know, 4 or 5 seasons. I'm sure it's what they promised HBO when they sold it. Whether they get to do that is anybody's guess, but you have to show them the house you're going to build in success, as opposed to like, we got 8 episodes, guys, and we're done. But yeah, they seem very sanguine about that.
And I think they also, from the interviews we've done, expressed that they wish they could have made like 4-hour It movies in the first place. So they already have this hunger for the material to expand and breathe more life into it. And they talk about how the attraction to children dealing with horrific situations, because they were young when they experienced this book and this franchise, that they really just keep returning to that feeling of trying to capture that youthful terror and bravery at the same time. And I think it's interesting seeing the Losers Club incarnations going back, and how that, we joked about it, like, you know, parents just don't understand, will always be like a conflicting element of like the kids. It is like, mom, dad, you don't understand, like, there really is a cloud. And they're like, sure, Kathy.
Yeah. And I think that the idea of feeling like an outcast, like I was thinking today, like, why is this as important as it was in the 1980s, as it was in the 90s with the TV miniseries, as it is with the movies and now? And it's always the idea of the outcast kids who aren't being listened to, which is like a classic trope of like, there's something out there, sheriff. No, there's not, you know, young person. But the idea of being the outcast, and then the outcasts, the kids on the back of the bus banding together, I feel like it's always going to be with us no matter what.
Yeah, and I think there's something also about the fact that horror is very often told by outcasts. You know, the people doing the storytelling are people on the fringes to a certain degree, who aren't understood by people around them. Like, we are the freaks, everybody. And so we tell freak stories. And I think that the Muschietti's would be the first ones to say that they are, you know, someone on the outside of stuff. You look at Tim Burton, Guillermo del Toro, Sam Raimi, John Carpenter, like Wes Craven. None of these are mainstream storytellers. They're all people who've lived their lives on the outskirts of normality. And they're the ones who understand what makes it scary.
And it's still nothing scarier than I think. And this starts a lot with King, which is bringing the horror into suburbia. You know, it's not about the urban stories with King. So many of those scariest things were in our, it kind of reminds me of like David Lynch and Blue Velvet and this kind of scenic thing. What is happening under that surface of a seemingly perfect white picket fence? What America wants to think it is, but there's always something working way underneath. And in this case, literally in our sewers, which I actually today, until today, I didn't know what where he got the initial kernels. But the two things I picked up were he was crossing a bridge when walking in Colorado when he was in 78, and he came across an old wooden bridge that he had to walk across in the Three Billy Goats. Came back to him, and he was like, oh, I could put that. And then the other part was the sewer system, the history of the sewer system in Bangor, Maine, fascinated him. And I was like, those are two things. I'm always curious where these kernels, you know, start to kind of turn into the full story. But that makes a lot of sense.
Because
I don't think we, just like you never see toilets in movies, like Psycho was a big deal because there's a toilet flushing. You don't think about sewer systems. And it wasn't until me and Becca visited Seattle and they do these tours of the underground that once was, and it just blows your mind.
It's amazing.
Oh yeah, we take for granted that there's a giant underground that is working for every city in America.
And I was grossly aware of it when I lived in New York City, because you're down in it all the time, and you see the scope of like that. For everything that exists above, it's as below the same. Like there's just as many levels and stories and everything. Here in LA, you completely forget that there is anything under your feet because nobody has basements until suddenly you're like, wait, there's tunnels. Or we do have in Los Angeles, occasionally you'll be like walking along in a park and you'll see this like gated off old entrance into some underground passageway, and they're always locked so that people don't sleep in there. But yeah, then suddenly you're like, oh, that's weird. That's literally what the movie Absentia is about. But yeah, there's just, you find these weird holes.
On Halloween, on my way to, and I didn't know if this was campaigned by the show or just some sicko who just made my Halloween, the entire way to my kid's school, somebody had put a single red balloon every single grape. So it's just coming from every
game.
Single.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
That's someone who just wanted to mess with everyone.
It was so creepy. It was like the whole way there, and everyone commented on it because, you know, past like 10 of them, and it's just a perfect balloon with a little white thing. I think it was right around the first episode, and I was so impressed that somebody took the time and that it has that image alone is as creepy as Pennywise, because it indicates. Come closer, something is waiting, you know, which is, it's fantastic. So
let's talk for a second about the podcast. So the podcast, you guys go through and you examine each episode as it airs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do a recap and we get a lot of help, a really great team with Spoke Media, really helpful in like helping produce the show. And then we go through and recap the episode, and we then will pair it with an interview. And we've done most of them together, a few we split up with, but it's really interesting to talk about it with Mark, because we often have a moment of just like sibling brain of like, did you see what they put on the screen today? Like,
and it's also super fun because I hadn't met Princess before we started this podcast, so it was like, you know, you show up on day one on Zoom, it's like, oh, okay, hey buddy, let's talk about episode 101 of Welcome to Derry, and we did very quickly fall into a rhythm and an understanding for both each other and the work and how we like to work. To the point where it's like, she's always been doing this. We've always been hanging out. And
we've never not been together.
We've never not done this.
That sounds very Shining of you.
A little bit. Yeah. You all float down here.
Is it 26 years that he comes back?
27.
Oh, 27. So every 27 years, you guys will do this. That's great.
Pretty much.
Perfect.
Pretty much.
We need a retirement plan. So thank God for that. Thank God for Pennywise.
So as we're wrapping up, let's just give kind of our favorite moment of the series so far, I'd say. I know that we're only three episodes.
Are we
episodes
allowed to spoil
in.
It? I guess we can.
I'm just going to say, these don't have to be spoilers. I'm just going to say first episode theater scene. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, we're doing this now.
Yeah.
Oh, we're just going to kill everybody. Okay.
Okay. Right. That was some game change for me. Any others?
From the three episodes we got, I think Pickle Daddy. Like, I still think about that.
Oh, Pickle Daddy.
Not that very disturbing. Yeah.
Yeah. Pickle Daddy is going to stay with me for a while, just because it's we talked to the effects team and the costume designer, and just that squelchy sound that the whole thing made in the lights. Like, I couldn't even have pickles in my sandwich afterwards. So I think that scene was just really evocative and just like emotionally tiring. Just the whole leading up to it was just really well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick another one that's not that supermarket scene.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Just because, like, all of the dance that they were weaving of, like, the aisles closing off and the weird shoppers paying attention to Lily as she's walking through, like, it was all so incredibly evocative. But I do love that first scene with Maddie when he gets picked up as a hitchhiker and is with that family.
The liver.
And just, the pieces of liver and just the words that the kid is spelling and just all of the ways that each of these people are wrong. And it begins to manifest slowly and then quicker and quicker. And then demon baby birth, which, you know, never a bad time.
I wasn't really expecting that by any stretch. That's just not where I was expecting it to go. And
you always think it's going to pull
amazing.
A punch, right? Yeah. You always feel like with TV, oh, they're not going to go there. And then this straight away went everywhere, which is great.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Excellent. So where and when can we find the It Welcome to Derry podcast?
As we've been told, every place a person gets podcasts.
Hell yes.
You know, the Spotify's, your Apple podcast apps, whatever private app you happen to be using, including on HBO Max, where like you can watch us. And I use the watch us in quotes because the podcast will play on video on your TV screen with lots of evocative imagery. This kind of spooky sewers and balloons.
Ooh.
And just listen to us as we wax philosophic about Welcome to Derry.
Fantastic.
How many episodes have you two seen beyond? Have you gone beyond the three? Or are you not, we're not going to ask.
All of them, right?
Oh, you've seen it.
Seen oh, you got the whole enchilada. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So in episode six.
No, let me just, are we in for good things?
For sure.
Yes. 100%, you know, and including some really heartbreaking things and some touching things, because, you know, this is a story about kids discovering who they are and what they mean to each other. And, you know, all of this stuff that they eventually get into is both lovely and heartbreaking. So
oof. I'm also a huge Warriors fan. It's one of my favorite movies. And so James Remar being in this interest straight away. And then when they showed him as a kid, that's when I started to go, oh, cool. I'm getting to see this character when he was and his little love story. It's kind of fun. So
I love the divide of people who know him from Warriors and those of us who know him from Sex and the City. And it's just like,
oh, really? Dexter as well, of course. But, you know,
right.
Yeah, that's what immediately I went to was Dexter. So I didn't even recall him from the Warriors. So
he's
literally
like the second guy, so the other main guy.
Oh my god, I did not even connect that. I'm like so looking at him on Google right now. Oh my gosh, that's wild.
They all looked pretty good back then in Warriors.
They did. I mean, oh my gosh, yeah.
Just everyone, the cocaine thin.
Yeah. Little sweaty, but yeah, really good. So with the hotness of James Remar, thank y'all so much for joining us on this. This has been a wonderful look back at the It franchise leading up to this fantastic TV show. Thank y'all so much. So everyone, please check out It Welcome to Derry on HBO, as well as the It Welcome to Derry podcast. Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is brought to you by It Welcome to Derry, the new TV show that serves as a prequel to It. You're about to hear Elric and I rave about it on the show this week. From the director of It comes a horrifying new story set in the 1960s, Derry, Maine, a story that explores the origins of Pennywise the Clown. Get ready to go back to where it all began. The first few episodes were packed with scares and some of the best nightmare sequences that we've seen in a long time. The new HBO series, It Welcome to Derry, is now streaming on HBO Max. Please also check out the It Welcome to Derry podcast. On the It Welcome to Derry podcast, join hosts Mark Bernardin and Princess Weeks as they unpack each episode after it airs on HBO Max. The It Welcome to Derry podcast walks you back down the streets of Derry 27 years before the Losers Club first formed, and then pulls you down into the sewers to dig into the history and the lore and the horror of what makes Derry Maine's most sinister suburb. On each episode, you'll hear from the show's creator, like Andy and Barbara Muschietti, plus cast and crew members as they talk about the making of the show. New podcast episodes drop every week after the episode airs on HBO Max. Stream new episodes of HBO's It Welcome to Derry Sundays on HBO Max, and listen to It Welcome to Derry official podcast wherever you get your podcasts.